It's a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and this is our Worldview Wednesday edition of the program. And so we're going to be talking about a couple of stories, both at home here domestically and internationally as well. There's a couple things in the news that are dovetailing together that we want to talk about on the program here today. There was an uproar yesterday over John McCain, Senator John McCain, making a comment that that Christians saying praise the Lord or thank God is equivalent to Muslims using the phrase Allah Akbar. There was a story that was being done by Fox News, and they were showing some footage of the quote-unquote rebels in Syria shooting a shoulder-fired missile, took down a plane that was, of course, the plane being with the government there in Syria. And as the plane crashed, you could hear the quote-unquote rebel shouting, Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar. And so the Fox reporter said, you know, I have trouble, Senator McCain, that we're supporting a group of people who say those types of things, showing that they are just like the other radical Muslims that have done things and, you know, use that same phrase. To which Senator McCain then replied, well, then I guess you would have trouble with Christians saying, thank God, because that's really the type of thing that they're saying. So, and he said to the reporter, come on. You know, he was basically accusing him of being Islamophobic and that he was showing some sort of prejudice against Islam because of this statement. So the question, that's one news story that's out, and I want to talk about that a little bit. Can we really equate those two things? Should they be thought of as being on par? And an associated story is one that was written in World Magazine as well that makes us think along this same line. Is Islam and Christianity equal? Should they be looked at as being equal? And it's coming up in the mayoral race that is taking place in New York City. Now, we've heard a lot about some of the political things in New York City, mostly centered around Anthony Weiner. This is not any story related to that. But this is a story about an AP article came out saying that the government, specifically there within New York City, had been spying on mosques. They had some operations underway that they were listening in and watching very carefully what was taking place in mosques. And the question now has arisen, is it right for them to do that? Is that really something that should be done? And right away, when you bring that up, you know, you normally get other people saying, well, you're Christian, you know, how would you like it if the government was listening in and had people infiltrate your church and they were coming into your church services trying to, you know, ascertain what was being taught and what's going on with the individuals in the church and so forth. And so that article as well, written by Emily Bells, kind of raises similar questions. How do we look at Islam? How do we look at specifically here Islam in America and in the mosques and specifically in New York City? Well, Emily Bells is a reporter with World Magazine, and she's actually reports on issues related to New York City. And this particular issue not only has a local flavor to it for the folks there in New York, but it also has a national ramifications because this is one issue within that campaign that goes beyond the borders of New York. It's something that, you know, is of interest to all the people in the United States of America. So with that, let's bring Emily into the discussion today. Emily, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Emily, let's talk about your article a little bit. You talk about some top Republican candidates. I think they were in a debate format when this question was raised. Tell us what happened. What's the context of this taking place, these statements being made, and then we can move forward from there.
Yeah, so right before the mayoral debate, the Associated Press released this article that had information from classified NYPD documents that showed that the NYPD had been spying on mosques over the last 12 years since September 11th in certain situations. So then the moderators asked the different candidates about this practice and whether they supported it. And Joe Loda, who's the top Republican candidate for mayor, he said that he supported the practice. He thought it was consistent law enforcement. The Democratic candidates have spoken against the practice. So it's formed a real clear dividing line between the candidates in this race.
One of the things that we need to know, I guess, in thinking about whether this is right or wrong is, has it actually been credited with thwarting any terrorist attacks there in New York City?
Well, that's some key information, which was not in the Associated Press article. The NYPD hasn't been forthcoming about, whether their intelligence has prevented attacks. But they've said that they've prevented 16 attacks since September 11th, specific large-scale terrorist attacks against the city. They didn't reveal whether the surveillance of mosques played a role in that, but it's hard to know one way or the other.
How many operations are we talking about that were listed in the report?
It's not as many as you would think from the headline on the Associated Press article. I mean, they reported 12 spying operations since September 11th. So that's, 12 years, and they've only done 12 surveillance operations, at least that the Associated Press reported on. So it doesn't seem as extensive as you might think.
Did the report reveal that the NYPD designates the mosques into a unique category?
Yeah, so that was part of the what really caught the general public's attention, I think, is that the NYPD had categorized mosques as terrorist organizations so that they could conduct surveillance operations. They wouldn't have legal authority to go in and do spying if they didn't designate the mosques as terrorist operations. And their justification for that is that mosques are often used to funnel money to terrorist organizations and that they're often used for recruiting of terrorist organizations through the people at the mosque. So I think just the idea that you would designate a religious organization as a terrorist organization without any real due process was really disconcerting to the general public.
I would imagine, though, that in order to obtain that status, to put them into that category, it's not just somebody just saying, there's a lot of money that is funneled through these mosques and so forth. I would imagine that in order to do that legally, that they there's some criteria there, that there's some, there is some evidence that's presented to show that X number of dollars have been funneled that way, that there is some sort of standard that has to be met in order for them to put any group into that category. Would you? I don't know if your report revealed that, but I would just assume that to be the case.
Yeah, the Ray Kelly, who's the police commissioner here, he said that the NYPD had followed all the protocols. They had stayed well within the law in what they did. A lot of this is really hard to, you know, it's under kind of cloaks and shadows because it's intelligence, it's classified, it's secret operations. So it's really hard to have a lot of transparency. I mean, there's a lot of parallels, I guess, to, you know, what the NSA and CIA are doing in terms of terrorism investigations, in that, you know, we sort of know that they're doing surveillance, but we don't know what the standards are exactly for how they collect that information.
Hmm. Now, he added that that mosques shouldn't be designated as terrorist organizations, but said law enforcement had properly investigated within the bounds of the law. And again, that's Police Commissioner Ray Kelly. So the police commissioner is saying that the category that they were put into was not proper, but it was proper that they be investigated. So are we just talking semantics here that, you know, they had to be put into that category just in order to allow for law enforcement to use more tools available to them? Or, you know, is the if people just are they concerned about the optics of this? They don't like the idea that they've taken a religious organization and put this label on it.
Yeah, I think your assessment is right on. I mean, I would assume that the police department realizes now that that those semantics, those optics are bad, and they want to be able to conduct surveillance without having to, you know, say that a religious organization is a terrorist organization. So obviously Ray Kelly's concerned about the public relations on this, I think, but he's going to continue with the surveillance operations.
Hmm. There's a pretty large Islamic community in New York City. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't know the exact numbers, but you know, a dozen surveillance operations in the city of New York is not a whole lot in a city of 8 million people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was visiting there earlier this year, I was just surprised that, you know, the interaction between Muslims and non-Muslims seems seamless. It didn't seem like anybody was being profiled or, you know, anything was out of order there, even with, you know, of course, with the attack happening right there. I was just surprised at the amount of seamless interaction between people of different religions. So I didn't see any of that on a street level, you know, just any sort of issues there like that. Is that a general an accurate perception of what's going on there in New York City? You're in New York, is that correct?
Yeah, I think that the city's gone through a lot of effort to embrace the Muslim population here and try to you know, remove the divides that might be there. I mean, you saw a lot of the tensions over this with the debate about the Ground Zero Mosque. So I think there are still, there's a lot of sensitivity because people remember 9/11 so vividly here. But New York's also a very diverse city religiously, and people are very used to living next to people of different religions and getting along quite well.
Mm-hmm. What are the people that wrote the AP article, Matt Apuzzo, I think is how you say his name, A-P-U-Z-Z-O. He responded in a tweet that, like NSA phone spying, biggest issue on NYPD mosque program is not legality, rather shows us what we've allowed and made legal since 9/11. So he says, yeah, it may be legal that they do it, but the real problem is that we've made it legal for them to do it since 9/11. When you know, we read things like that, statements being made, it just seems like, man, people got a short memory about what it felt like on 9/12, 2001. I mean, I think the sentiment then was, man, we are under attack, and and we have no way to defend ourselves, and every plane that was taking off or landing was looked at with suspicion, and we felt very, very vulnerable. And I'm afraid that a comment like his there makes me think that maybe we've become a little too lax again. What do you make of his comment?
Well, I think the U.S. as a whole and New York City are figuring out how to fight the terrorism war. And, you know, it's been 12 years, but that's a relatively short amount of time in terms of developing new techniques and learning how to do this based on intelligence rather than, you know, a ground war. So I think everyone's trying to adapt to a new world, and it's been a miracle that we've not had a major attack since then. Mm-hmm. So I think the people who are in law enforcement right now do have that record really on their side in defending some of these practices. But I think we're still going to be going through a lot of adjustments in terms of protecting civil rights and doing national security.
Mm. Let me remind our listening audience, we're speaking with Emily Bells from World Magazine about an article that she wrote for World Magazine entitled "To Spy or Not to Spy, Top New York Mayoral Candidates Weigh In on Counterterrorism Strategies at Mosques." That's what we're talking about. You know, is it right to be bugging the mosques? Is it right to be investigating those that are going to the mosque, you know, trying to find out about the people involved there? That's what's taking place in New York, and as Emily just alluded to it, it's actually an issue that really has national ramifications. As we wrestle with this idea of surveillance or non-surveillance, how much surveillance, these types of things in order to keep the American people safe. No surprise here, Emily, but your article goes on to say that the American Civil Liberties Union has sued the police department over the surveillance of mosques. I don't think anybody will be shocked by that that line in there. Here they come again, and, you know, who cares about whether it's keeping us safe or not, but here they are going to sue the police department over the surveillance. How's that lawsuit being received?
Well, this has been going on for several years now, and I think the ACLU has been involved in various lawsuits, and this is a new lawsuit based on the surveillance information that the AP put out. But they, you know, it's going to be years and years before the courts really work all this out, because I'm sure things are going to be appealed and appealed. So we'll just kind of have to sit back and get some popcorn.
Yeah, watch how this turns out. In your article, you point out an incident in 2003 where the FBI reportedly refused to bug a mosque where an imam was suspected of delivering money for terrorism. So the NYPD went ahead and bugged the mosque on their own. And so I guess that's one good thing. The state was able to trump the federal government on that, and the state basically said, you know, hey, this is happening in our backyard. You can play the politically correct game if you want on the national level, but this deals with our families. You know, this deals with the people that we know here, and so they go ahead and bug the mosque. Did it ever come out? What was the result of that? Did they ever find out that the person in question was actually doing something nefarious?
Yeah, so that information was classified to begin with, and the only thing that the AP revealed was that there was an investigation. So they didn't talk about what the result of the investigation was. But I think their point was that the NYPD has taken matters into their own hands when they could, and done surveillance operations on their own when they found leads that pushed them to do that.
Mm.
And I think Ray Kelly's just said that, you know, this is normal law enforcement. You you hear a lead, you follow the lead, you collect evidence. And if that was happening in a church, I think they would probably be doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to talk about that a little bit in the second half of the program, that not so sure that we're talking apples to apples here when we think about, you know, church versus mosque, or as I led in with Senator McCain making that comment that Allah Akbar is the equal to Christians saying thank God, or I don't know if he misunderstood what the statement actually is about Allah Akbar, but God is great is the idea. And then equating that to the idea of Christians saying thank God or praise the Lord or something along that line. We'll talk about that in the second half of the program, because I think he's completely mistaken about that one. Let me ask you about the race itself. You said that the Republican candidate was taking some fire, some heat for his comment being in support of the surveillance. How about the Democratic candidate? What's his view, and how is that affecting him?
Well, Bill de Blasio is the top Democratic candidate for mayor, and he is likely to win the mayoral election altogether, just because there's, you know, seven Democrats in New York for every one Republican. But he has said that the AP report was very troubling, and he seemed to indicate that he would not be keeping Ray Kelly on as a commissioner, and that he disapproves of those practices. So, you know, it'll be interesting once he actually gets into office, if he does win, you know, if once he sees intelligence operations and how it works, if his position would remain the same. But it looks like right now that, you know, from outside of that world, that he's opposing the surveillance operations.
Well, that the plot thickens here, because with the top Democratic candidate for mayor in New York City saying that he would let the police commissioner go, Ray Kelly, that's interesting, because reportedly President Obama is considering Kelly to head up the Department of Homeland Security. So if the Democratic president says that he's good enough to, you know, be running the entire department looking at this over the entire United States and even around the world, some of the things that are taking place, how much, you know, does that set the two at odds? It seems like a house divided there to me when I look at it.
Yeah, I mean, Ray Kelly has to be smiling to himself a little bit. And he has a really, he's under his commissionership, he has brought crime down to historic lows in the city, and there hasn't been a terrorist attack since 2001. And so I think that he's not concerned by criticisms from the Democratic candidates right now. I think he's pretty satisfied with his record. And maybe he'll go on to Washington, D.C. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. The actual primary for the GOP doesn't take place until, what, September 10th?
Yes. Both parties have their primaries next Tuesday. So we'll have a lot of answers in a week about where the city is heading.
And I would assume that in New York, really, the Republican candidate doesn't have much chance of winning this overall race. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it's pretty rare. I mean, Rudy Giuliani has won. Mike Bloomberg was a Republican at one point. But those were kind of rare circumstances. I've heard some people say that they think that Joe Lotta has a small chance, but it looks like the Democrats are probably going to be the victors here.
Yeah, I guess a lot can change before November, but that would be pretty surprising. That would be pretty noteworthy and newsworthy if that actually took place, being the general makeup of New York City. Well, Emily, thank you very much for reporting on this issue. We really appreciate the work that you do there, specifically your reporting from New York City, and then also just on a much broader scale, the work there at World Magazine, reporting all across the country and indeed around the world. Thank you once again.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, that was Emily Bells from World Magazine. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back from the break, I want to use that story to broaden it out a little bit to talk about Senator John McCain's statement about that Allah Akbar is the same as Christians shouting, "Thank God." I'd love for you to weigh in on that. I'd love your thoughts on whether or not they should be bugging mosques in New York City, and your thoughts about Senator McCain's comments as well. 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. Be right back.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Let me tell you a foundational thought here, and this is really important. There are no perfect parents. There are no perfect children. And as we start to put together a plan, just understand we're going to get it wrong sometimes. But what's exciting is if we have a plan, we've got a better chance of getting it right in the long run than if we don't.
Right.
You have two choices. I mean, you can try to raise your children by design, or you will raise them by default.
There is something deep within the heart of every human being that longs for parental acceptance and approval.
Listen to these words. Son, I love you. I'm proud of you. Did you hear those words often growing up? Not much.
I don't think my parents ever said it. They loved me until I was about 50. So I took a different tack with my kids.
They're not yours. They're not mine. We are stewards. God gives us 18 to 20 years to lay a foundation, and they build on it for half a century.
You know, our culture today in America in the 21st century really doesn't have a marked time of transition from being a boy to being a man. I mean, what does it really mean to be a mentor every day in a practical way? Without the power of the Holy Spirit changing us and giving us power over our sin, we can't hope to be the dads that our kids need us to be.
Visit boyspassage.com today to order Kirk Cameron's revolutionary new video series for fathers and sons.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Well, welcome back into the second half of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. Here's the question that we're considering on the second half of the program today as part of our Worldview Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. Is shouting Allah Akbar the same as Christians shouting thank God? When the Muslims shout Allah Akbar, is that equivalent to Christians saying thank God or praise the Lord? Well, Senator John McCain feels that it is, and here's the interaction that took place between Senator McCain and Brian Kilmeade from the Fox News Network. Let me play this one-minute clip, and then we'll talk about this issue.
I know you met with General Idris, who is a defector from the Syrian army, who's come out. Some say that he does have tie to Muslim extremists. I don't know. Well, listen to this video, Senator McCain, of a Syrian, it looks like a fighter jet being shot out of the sky. Listen to what they say afterwards.
Allahu Akbar!
I have a problem helping those people out if they're screaming
that
after a hit.
Would you have a problem with American and Christians saying thank God, thank God? That's what they're saying. Come on. Of course they are Muslims, but they are moderates, and I guarantee you that they are moderates. I know them and I've been with them. For someone to say Allah Akbar is about as offensive as someone saying thank God.
General Dempsey came in.
So there's a number of things in this clip that we need to focus on, and in order to look at this, the first thing right on the surface is whether or not the statement Allah Akbar is equivalent to the idea of Christians shouting, thank God. And Senator McCain making that equivalency is an issue as well. First of all, the Allah Akbar actually is, I think, translated, as far as I've heard it translated and heard it spoken of by folks that know much more about Islam than I do, but they say it actually means God is great. That is what's being said. God is great. And so, just linguistically, it is not to be translated then, thank God. But they're just, it's a rallying cry, it's a battle cry that is used by in Islam that is spoken of as, you know, God is great, that something has happened, God is, their God has blessed them and made it so that they've had a fortuitous or a prosperous event has taken place in their view. So that's the first thing right on the surface there. I think that we were talking about it in the studio here beforehand, and somebody brought up about the idea, Jim did, with the idea of, blasphemy here, where that the senator would associate that same statement with the idea of God, the one true God. That they're not speaking of the one true God as we know him in the scriptures, and just because they attribute that to him, for him to then attribute it, you know, shows a complete misunderstanding about the things of Christianity to start with. And, you know, so I think that it really is not very good for Senator McCain to make that equation one to the other. And the question then, I think, has risen about the idea of the second question is Senator McCain saying, well, these were moderate Muslims, and that, you know, he can guarantee to us that these are moderate Muslims. I would love to ask the senator how, you know, what is the mechanism that you have that nobody else seems to have that can now be a infallible detector as to we're dealing with moderate Muslims or radicalized Muslims. The bigger question in that is, you know, is Islam itself a violent religion? Is it inherently violent religion? And is a so-called moderate Muslim, is that moderate Muslim just a bad Muslim, you know, that he's not following all the teachings, and so he would be looked upon as kind of like a liberal Muslim, and therefore, you know, if they're really going to serve Muslim, conserve Islam the way that, and be a good Muslim, they really have to buy into all the tenets of it, including jihad and all of these other aspects of it, more violent aspects of it. So it raises a lot of questions, and I think that, you know, Senator McCain making a statement like this is naive. You know, I think that we need to look at the facts of what is taking place. We've got 3,000 dead Americans from planes that were flown into those buildings, as well as into the Pentagon and into the field in Pennsylvania. So we've got dead people, actual corpses, as a result of this ideology. It was attributed to their belief in Islam. Not only that act, but numerous acts around the world and numerous acts of aggression against the United States have been done in the name of Islam as well. For instance, we just had the trial of the Fort Hood shooter, which the government refused to talk about it as a terrorist attack and instead referred to it as being workplace violence. I'm talking about Hassan and his, he was dressed in all white, you know, the white robes of the Islamic imams and, you know, along with Islamic teaching. He shouted when he shot the 13 people dead there at the Fort Hood shooting. He reportedly shouted, Allah Akbar, again, the battle cry. And that's what it seems to be. It's not just Christians saying praise the Lord over something fortuitous happening in their life or thanking God for answered prayer or something along that line. This is a particular battle cry that is given by the jihadists, is where we keep hearing it come up over and over again. Those that are doing acts of terrorism, those are the folks that we hear this cry come out of. So for McCain to glibly and naively just brush it off as being, oh, well, you know, it's no big deal, it's just like a Christian making a similar comment, I beg to differ, Senator. I don't think that the equation that you're making there is an accurate one. And this, we can see that this has broad ramifications. Ideas have consequences. And broad ramifications, so much so, that he has now been over there, along with Lindsey Graham, by the way, over there with, you know, making nice with the Muslim Brotherhood, and under this naive impression that, you know, they don't really want us dead. They're really, quote-unquote, moderate Muslims. When I hear this phrase, moderate Muslim, I've got to ask myself, where are all these moderate Muslims? Where are they when these attacks take place and we see that, you know, there's a deafening silence that comes over afterwards when these attacks take place? Well, I didn't see any moderate Muslims commending the fact that Nedel Hassan was given a death sentence. I don't see any of the moderate Muslims coming out and protesting and saying the fella that made that video and then was put in prison for a year for making that video that was then attributed to the Benghazi attacks by our government, I don't see them marching in the street and saying that this guy was, you know, wrongly charged with this crime, and that, you know, Muslims escalated this thing, you know, beyond what it should have been escalated. I don't see the moderate Muslims in the streets protesting against honor killings taking place where, you know, Muslim fathers take the life of their own daughters because they become too westernized. I don't see the moderates when something takes place, you know, and then there's literally tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people marching in the streets because Muhammad's name was spoken about in a bad light, and then they're marching in the streets by the hundreds of thousands saying death to America, and hanging our people in effigy and burning the American flag and demanding that blood be shed because someone has spoken out against their religious leader. I don't see the moderate Muslims speaking out about these things. You know, I hear crickets when these things take place. And so how Senator McCain seems to have this you know, this intuitive knowledge that he feels is infallible. I can guarantee to you that these are moderate Muslims. Well, McCain, weren't you the same one who wanted the people in Egypt as well to get in power? And they turned out to be a little too friendly with the Muslim Brotherhood. You know, it didn't seem like the infallible meter that you were working with there was working too well. And so, you know, the credibility of these guys to be able to declare these certain people to be moderate Muslims seems to be really suspect. And that's the problem. I've actually said on the program repeatedly that I think that there is good grounds for us to call for a moratorium on all mosque building in this country, because we don't have a good mechanism for telling who is moderate and who is not moderate Muslim. We don't have a mechanism for doing that. We know that very often the evidence has shown repeatedly, it is there's volumes of evidence in this regard, that many of them come out of these mosques, that the imams are extremely influential in their life, and the imams are calling for violence against the West. And we've also found, and this is where Americans seem to be so naive, we found that they have learned how to use our system against us. You know, our system being that we have a system of religious freedom in this country, and therefore they've realized that our own freedoms can be used against us in order to persuade us to think better of Islam or speak better or think better of the practices of Islam. For instance, I did an entire program about Fethullah Gulen, you know, with the charter school, and now school started. I drove by the other day there on Pelham Road, a large sign across the building, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of our tax dollars have been invested in the building over there to do the work on the building, and it says Green Charter School on the front of the building. Well, this is a school that is run by Fethullah Gulen, who is a Muslim out of Turkey who then speaks of himself as being a moderate Muslim. But then we find out that we've got now recordings of him and tapes of him speaking to his followers and saying in that tape that he has adopted a strategy of a stealth strategy, and his stealth strategy is that you pretend to be moderate, and then you get into the system, and you get into all of the the tributaries of the system until you have power, and you lay low until the time is right. And then when the time is right, that's when you strike. He spoke about a spider doing this, that a spider, you know, lays low, lays out of the way, doesn't appear to be too menacing until the fly, you know, lands in the web, and then the spider comes out and strikes. And so we know that this strategy is being employed by them, but so oftentimes we have a short memory here in this country as to, you know, what has happened to us. People, you know, the better side of people that's are unwilling to be thought of as being in any way to profile people or to be, the worst thing that you could possibly be called is racist or anything along that line. Those things are being used against us in this country. And we have to just be colorblind on all of these things and to look at them just objectively and say Islam is not the same as Christianity. You don't get people coming out of Christianity. You may get one or two, right, that may have some sort of a tie with a Christian church that have done, you know, awful things, you know, these types of mass destruction, you know, we're taking the life of large groups of people. You may get a few people, bad apples, that are in there that do that. But on the whole, you get the mainline Christian Orthodox groups condemning these things. They condemn violence over and over again. They immediately ostracize these people and condemn the acts that they do. They don't condone them and encourage their people to be involved in them. It's completely different. It's only because of Christianity that Islam can be tolerated the way that it is in this country. It's because of our roots, our Christian roots, that we do believe in real tolerance here, where people are free to worship the way that they want to worship. Islam is something different, though. They are tied in where this idea of worldwide dominance, this idea of that if you don't believe what we believe, then you are an infidel and you are worthy of one of two things, either to be ruled over by the Muslims or to be put to death, because you're not worthy of living if you don't agree with Islam or if you speak critically against the leadership in Islam, i.e. Muhammad. Just a cartoon against Muhammad, which, you know, is political satire, basically, right? But just a cartoon against Muhammad is enough to get a fatah, or whatever it's called, on your head, you know, where you'll be basically, a target is put upon you and you're deemed worthy of death because you have spoken against Muhammad. So, you know, for Senator McCain to just equate these two things, I think is just way out of bounds. He doesn't understand either religion, apparently. And here is, you know, one of our senators over there trying to tell us that, you know, we should go ahead and get involved in these wars. By the way, when we think about what's taking place, like in Syria, and the Islamic involvement in these things, look at what happens. Everywhere that Islam is the predominant religion, look at what we see take place. We see that there is bloodshed on a large-scale bloodshed that takes place. Shouldn't that tell us something about this religion as a whole? I often wondered myself, what are the actual products that come out of these countries where all of this is going on? All they do is protest on a regular basis. There is constant regime change. There is constant bloodshed going on. These seem to be the tenets. I mean, shouldn't this tell us something about Islam as a whole? It seems to be a very violent religion, even among themselves. It doesn't seem to matter whether it is the infidel is one thing, but even among themselves, there is a tremendous amount of bloodshed, constant civil war that is going on. This is what Islam leads to. It's not a religion of peace. It doesn't lead to peace. This isn't what we see here. It leads to constant bloodshed. So now we talk about Syria and what is taking place there. By the way, I did a little informal poll. I was at a little coffee place today, and I walked in. I saw one of the fellas I knew, and the fella said to me, there was at least six men that were sitting there, all retired. They were having coffee together, and I could tell that they were talking about Syria, and so about whether or not we should go in. So when I was getting mine, one of the guys knew me, and he said, hey, this fella here, he's on the radio, and he's got a radio show and these things. So I turned around to them, and I acknowledged the one fella that I knew, and then I said to the rest of the guys that are there, I said, well, let me take a little informal poll here. And I said, let me just ask you, yes or no, should we get involved in Syria or not? And all the guys that were there said, absolutely not. So just my little informal poll, six people randomly selected, they said, no, the U.S. should not get involved in this. So then, you know, they said, I said to ask a couple other questions about it, you know, why not? Should we get involved? They said, well, let us, first of all, put a little context to our answer. He said, the one fellow spoke up and he said, let me tell you how many of the guys that are here have all been in the military. And so he looked at each one, he pointed to each one, and he said, he has. And all of them, all six or seven that were there, they were all veterans. And so I thought that this was a little bit more interesting. I've got six or seven retired veterans. What do you think we should do? Now, the typical impression people may have is, you know, hawks, right? That these guys are trigger happy. Yeah, you know, let's go over there and, you know, do this, right? To a man, they all said, no, we shouldn't go in and do this. And part of their reasoning was that this is just another Islamic civil war. It won't be the only one. There's plenty of them going on, and therefore, you know, us getting involved is not going to make any difference whatsoever. Other ones said that, you know, there just isn't a clear objective here. So what, we lob a couple of cruise missiles into there, what real difference is this going to bring about in the situation? It kind of salves our conscience that we did something, you know, that we didn't let them get away with the chemical warfare and so forth. And so, you know, it just is more to ease our own conscience rather than anything else. And I think that, you know, they've got a lot of good points there. I don't clearly see what is, you know, first of all, a couple of things with Syria. whether or not, you know, I'm not so sure that we can actually prove that it was the Syrian government that did the attack. There's a lot of people asking it from this perspective right now. What did Assad have to gain by doing a chemical attack on this group of people? Now, let me say right up front, the idea of children dying by sarin gas is just a horrible thought and something that we categorically condemn. There's no doubt about it. But looking at what took place here, we need to say this. What did he have to gain by doing that? By all assessment, he is actually winning the war against the quote-unquote rebels that are there. So why would he launch a chemical attack, which basically took the lives of the record, according to Kerry, if you believe the numbers that came out there, 450 children. How does that actually help him win this war against these quote-unquote rebels that were there? It doesn't seem to make sense. Certainly he knew that this supposed red line had been put out, and that by doing something like that, it would only give impetus for the West to get involved in the war that was there. So why would he risk that if he was already winning the war? I think these are legitimate questions that need to be asked. And I think also we shouldn't think that the other side is so innocent in this whole thing. They've been shown to be just as ruthless. There's Al-Qaeda that is there. We've got bad people on both sides. This thing, what can go wrong, right, with us getting involved? We've got equally deplorable people on both sides of it. I think the other thing to take into consideration that has been a pattern with this president, that he removes dictators. We don't like the dictator, that's true. But the dictator that was there, there had been relative stability in those regions. So we remove Gaddafi. It had been, even though we didn't like Gaddafi, there had been relative stability in that region when Gaddafi was in power. Now we have chaos going on there, so much so that we have a dead ambassador as a result of it. We see Egypt. We have a the dictator that was there, his name's escaping me, but we have him in power there. And relative stability taking place. They're at peace with Israel. We then go in and remove him, and now we've got the Muslim Brotherhood and chaos going on there. And now the same thing with in Syria taking place. The pattern seems to be is that we remove the relatively stable dictator that's in place, and we keep filling the void with Muslim extremists. And so I don't think that the pattern has been very good here for us if we're talking about American interests around the world. Basically, over the past 4 or 5 years that this president has been in power, the Middle East situation has deteriorated at a much greater level. He has not done what he said he would do in the beginning, that he would bring everybody together and bring about peace, if anything. The exact opposite has taken place, and that's been his track record for the last couple of years. And so I don't think if he wants to go in there, I don't think it's a good idea. I don't think that we should follow him in and get involved in another mess that's taking place over there. We can condemn the use of chemical weapons and certainly the children being involved there. My first thought is, why are the children even there? If this is a war zone, they need to get out of that area and go somewhere else. But anyways, we can condemn what took place with them without sending our men and women into battle. Remember this, and we'll talk about this even more tomorrow on the radio broadcast, but Jesus said, he said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.